Hey folks, how's it going? My name is Chris and I am host of the Stellar Spark Show. And I know it's been a while since the last episode, but this episode is really going to be about the upcoming gubernatorial elections this year. And of course, President Biden's approval rating right now. So we're going to be talking about those two things in this episode today. So firstly, let's start off with the gubernatorial elections. So there's going to be two gubernatorial elections held next week on Tuesday, which are the gubernatorial elections in New Jersey and in Virginia. The latter of which has been a nationalized race now for quite some time. But let's start with New Jersey. We're going to first talk about New Jersey, then we'll talk about Virginia. And then I'm going to kind of talk about what implications these races have for next year in the 2022 midterms to give you a better sense of what I think is going to really transpire going forward here. Since this is an off-year election, there doesn't really tend to be a lot of enthusiasm that is had between either party, but the opposition party tends to do a little bit better in off-year elections because turnout is a lot lower. So in New Jersey right now, you have incumbent Governor Phil Murphy having a pretty decent approval rating in the 50s. At one point, it was in the 60s with his approval rating. And he's a fairly popular governor right now in New Jersey. And there really hasn't been a one-term Democratic governor reelected in about three decades in the state. So that makes things really interesting for someone like Phil Murphy really wanting to seek a second term. And we're really going to see if he's going to be successful at doing so. And his opponent is Jack Chitterelli, who is a New Jersey state assemblyman. And Chitterelli is more of a Trumpian type of Republican, which can hurt his chances in the state. And Murphy and Chitterelli have been going back and forth really on the issue of the economy and COVID. And Murphy really touts his handling of the COVID pandemic, trying to get the minimum wage up to $15 an hour and trying to Murphy helped to legalize the recreational marijuana as well as sports betting. So those things really have helped the budget in New Jersey, allowing the state to amass a $10 billion surplus in revenue, which is really good for the rainy day fund in case we enter into another recession or something like that, like we did last year. Those are some pretty good numbers to be running in an election on right now. And he had a strong response to the COVID crisis, kept the Jersey Shore open so a lot of people can enjoy their summer there. And Murphy, again, is in a pretty strong position in the polls as well. Murphy currently leads by anywhere to 8 to 10% in the polling, and it's been fairly consistent. He led by more in previous months, but the race has been tightening, as things usually do in the final stretch of a campaign. So I'd say Murphy is favored here, and I made the prediction on my channel how I think this election is going to turn out. I think that Phil Murphy is going to prevail despite Chitterelli's accusations. And Chitterelli's really trying to position himself as a competent manager, and that Murphy's economic policies have really led to businesses being driven away from the state. And I've saw some ads where Chitterelli is showing Murphy saying, yep, it's just not our state, basically. And this obviously was taken out of context, like a lot of ads are. basically insinuating that businesses should really give up on coming to New Jersey because of Murphy's supposed high property taxes in the state. And really trying to attack Murphy as being too liberal, out of touch with the average New Jersey, and really these attacks really haven't gotten too far, gone too far really to damage Murphy's electoral chances to a great extent, but it has made some effect on his poll numbers because he is the incumbent. And I guess it really helps that New Jersey consistently votes Democrat at the national and state level. The last governor that was a Republican was Chris Christie back in 2013. So not that long ago. And then obviously Christie left with a record low approval rating of about 15% or something like that after he left office. So it's unlikely a Republican is going to prevail in New Jersey. It's one of the most educated states in the nation, also has the strictest gun laws in the nation. It's basically like a giant suburb, like a big suburb. So I think enthusiasm is definitely on the Republican side right now, but I think they're going to definitely fall short here in New Jersey by a lot, just due to the state's voting history and demographics, as well as the accomplishments of the incumbent. So that's really all I have for New Jersey. I think Phil Murphy's going to win by about 8.4% over Jack Cittarelli. And you could quote me on that one. I do think that this race is likely Democratic for the incumbent. So with that being said, let's move on to the next state, which is the Commonwealth of Virginia. And Virginia is a very interesting state. It's quite a horse race right now. And the two candidates that are running there, we have Terry McAuliffe, former governor of Virginia from 2013 to 2017, and businessman Glenn Youngkin, former CEO of the Carlyle Group. And McAuliffe already was governor, so he's running again. He's basically running for re-election in a non-consecutive term in Virginia. Because the reason why that is because the Virginia Constitution bars governors for running for consecutive terms. And so the governor's power is pretty limited in setting an agenda to really get done over the years because you don't have that much time to really implement your agenda. You have 4 years instead of the usual 8 consecutive years. And that could really hamper someone's agenda as governor. There's also a lot of plural executives in Virginia. They have like the attorney general, they have the lieutenant governor, and some other offices. So overall, Virginia has a pretty strong executive other than that limit on their power. So McAuliffe is running again. So a lot of voters know what they're getting with Terry McAuliffe. They really don't know what they're getting with Glenn Youngkin because he's kind of an outsider. He's never held elected office before. And we know of another person that never held elected office before, but he was very popular with the working class. Obviously, I'm not going to mention him by name because Youngkin hasn't really mentioned him by name either. So in Virginia, Virginia is an interesting state. The state voted consistently Republican up until 2008 at the national level, was heavily Republican. At the state level at one point, but obviously it was Democratic from about the Civil War era up until FDR. And then you had Dwight Eisenhower. And Nixon with the Southern Strategy helped it to become more Republican. Obviously, with the after the Civil Rights Act, Virginia started voting more Republican because a lot of rural whites turned away from the Democratic Party and joined the GOP. So that's why Virginia from about 1964 to 2008 voted consistently Republican. It did vote Democratic at the state level in some elections, I believe. So overall, Virginia, up until today is pretty democratic from 2008 till today, has been very democratic and rapidly shifting leftward. Virginia's only had one Republican governor. Since then, it's been Bob McDonnell back in 2009. So it's been quite a while since Virginia has had a Republican governor. And Democrats dominate the state from the governor's mansion to the House of Delegates, which at one time was predominantly Republican. So it's definitely interesting. Now, Terry McAuliffe really touts his strength on the economy during his first term, and Youngkin has really challenged him on the crime rate. That was really high during McAuliffe's term, as well as Virginia's rankings, economic rankings, and job rankings have been like at the bottom in the nation, so like 49th in the nation, and he's really trying to run on strengthening the economy, creating jobs, and things of that nature. Also, in Virginia over the years, I think this is important background information, that Virginia has passed a lot of laws that were strict on guns under Ralph Northam's governorship. So instituting the gun buyback, red flag laws. I mean, these things are really unpopular in the state, especially in the rural areas where they're pro Second Amendment. Also, the abortion debate. Northam is really supportive of abortion rights. So that doesn't go over well in a state that's pretty pro-life overall, except for Northern Virginia and some other parts in the state. In the rural areas, they're staunchly pro-life. And I think these two issues alone are going to galvanize a lot of the Republican voters that are social conservatives to come out and vote against Terry McAuliffe. Now, Virginia demographically is interesting as well, because you have Northern Virginia, you have Southeastern Virginia, and you have Appalachia out in the western part of the state. So Virginia and Appalachia obviously is heavily Republican. It's coal country. There are low taxes, low regulation, culturally conservative. It's basically like Kentucky out there. And very rural place. Can't emphasize that enough. Probably going to go 70 to 30 for Glenn Youngkin. And then, of course, you have like Southern Virginia, Central Virginia there. It's pretty Republican as well. In the suburbs, it's pretty swingy. And then you have Southeastern Virginia, which tends to be more Democratic now. Probably going to Terry McAuliffe in strong margins. And then last but not least, you have Northern Virginia, which is heavily Democratic due to government workers, changing demographics. The population's becoming a lot younger in the state overall. So that favors the Democrats in itself. So that's really the state demographically. I think the Democrats have an advantage in Virginia because it's been trending leftward due to the aforementioned things that I described, but also that they know McAuliffe's a known quantity. I mean, he may not be the best candidate, but they know what they're getting with McAuliffe. And Youngkin can say he's a moderate and then pivot to the right after he's elected, because I'm sure a lot of people have concerns about Youngkin turning out to be like Trump, even though he's trying to distance himself from Trump, whether that's a political move or not, I'm not so sure. But we don't know a lot about Youngkin and his politics, because he's never held elected office, obviously. Youngkin is also trying to really gain the support of parents in Virginia, because it seems like McAuliffe is trying to drive a wedge between himself and this issue of education, because it seems like he's trying to alienate himself from these parents, that critical race theory should be taught in a lot of schools, and parents should have less of a say in their students' education. And we're going to have to see how that pans out, but obviously the Democrats have the support of teachers' unions and things like that. Whereas I could see someone like Glenn Youngkin supporting and pushing for school choice and allowing for parents to make that choice. And I think that's very popular in the state. Youngkin is also doing well with independents. He's leading around 51 to 34, I believe, with independents or somewhere around there, getting around 20% of the black vote, 25% of the Hispanic vote, leading among men. And those in the 40 to 50 range, age range. Youngkin, I also think, is going to do better with suburban voters than Ed Gillespie because this is an off year and it's under a Democratic incumbent president, which tends not to do not to bode well in the year for the incumbent party. So that may very well factor into Youngkin's favor. Also, that Biden is underwater in Virginia and nationwide as a whole in terms of his approval rating. And that's what we're going to talk about next a little bit. That Biden's approval rating has been consistently sliding. And in Virginia and in New Jersey, Biden has tried campaigning for both nominees, both Democratic nominees, to help boost their chances in their respective states. But Biden may be more of a liability than a benefit right now in terms of the campaign because inflation has been rampant. We have an ongoing public health crisis in COVID, sluggish growth to keep up with that inflation. So prices for things are rising, like gas prices, food prices, the price of healthcare. And the Democrats pretty much ran on healthcare and saving Obamacare, establishing a public option. And a lot of their agenda is really stalled because you have a 50-50 Senate right now, and not much is going to get done on Capitol Hill because it's so partisan and so divided. But both the president and the Congress have a low approval rating now. I believe Congress's approval rating is a record low of 15%. Biden is around 41, I think, overall, or something like that. Or he's been an excuse me, he's been a 41 in recent polling, and he's underwater. I know he's underwater in the average. So that's going to reflect on the Democrats' chances. I mean, that's not going to be too good for the Democrats heading into 2022 when already the incumbents' party loses on average 27 seats. So I could definitely see the Republicans gaining way more than 27 seats up in near the 50s or something like that in the House. And I guess that would net about at least three Senate seats in the Senate. So we could easily see the Republican Party coming into 2023 with in control of Congress. Biden having a fledgling agenda, not much getting done on his part, and now the Republicans are well poised to put another Republican in the White House in 2024, whether that's Trump or someone else, I don't know. But that's what it's looking like right now. I mean, if the Democrats don't get it together going into next year, that's probably what's going to happen, and in my educated guess. And it all comes down to these two races this year, one of which I think is competitive and winnable for the Republicans. And it's essential for the Democrats to play defense here in a lot of these states. I believe they have a fundraising advantage, they have a voter registration advantage. They got to really start using these advantages to their benefit here to try and maintain the state, the Commonwealth of Virginia, and control of the state government. Otherwise, it's going to become difficult to really position themselves for a national strategy heading into next year because the momentum is going to be on the Republican side, and the energy certainly is on the Republican side for the midterm elections. So, to sum things up, in New Jersey, it's pretty likely Democratic there for the reasons that I went over. In Virginia, it's not as clear cut. It's more of a battle for that state and the governorship. I think it's going to be a nail biter. I really do. I think that one is going to be pretty close on Tuesday. But I see Terry McAuliffe narrowly holding on because the way the state has been shifting. And the polls have certainly been tightening. But I think due to the overwhelming influence of Nova and Terry having some strength in southeastern Virginia, I think this is going to really weigh on the final result and influence the final result. Youngkin's probably going to do better in places like Loudoun that Ed Gillespie really didn't do that well in 4 years prior. I could see Youngkin making some inroads to lose that by only 15. Fairfax by about 25. And Alexandria by about 50. So that would be an improvement over Gillespie and Trump. But I think McAuliffe's going to really suffer due to having dampened enthusiasm for Democrats across the ballot. And also the issue of party fatigue. That's what they've got to contend with. So in his last bid, McAuliffe barely won with a plurality. This time he's going to probably have the same, maybe a bare majority. But I would not rule out a Youngkin upset. I think that Glenn Youngkin can definitely upset in this race due to his strong campaign and running a pretty salient campaign on education, business, and the economy, as well as some other issues. So I wouldn't count him out. I think he's definitely in play for taking that office back in this election. So that's really all I have. And it remains to be seen. We'll see what happens. And I think for that race in Virginia, it's probably going to tilt Democratic for a Democratic win of about 1.6 is how I see that one going. Both narrow races. Obviously, Murphy has a little bit more room to breathe in that race than McAuliffe, but that's what I see happening. And that'll kind of prevent, I think, going into next year, the Republicans from wiping out the Democrats at the ballot box, and it'll be a pretty average year in terms of the loss of seats instead of an overwhelming loss that could happen if the Democrats do lose the governorship in Virginia or in New Jersey or both. If both happens, it's definitely going to be a catastrophe for the Democrats in 2022. If one of the two happens, I'd say it's going to be about the same. And in the scenario that I'm calling, they'll probably lose about 30 seats in the House, maybe a Senate seat. They might maintain control of the Senate, but that's really what I see happening right now. So let me know if you agree with this. You could comment on my channel to let me know. Also, follow the social media. Appreciate you listening as always. Let me know what other subjects you'd like me to cover. And for uploads for my channel, that would be greatly appreciated. But for now, we can only wait and we can only check the data and some of the voting that has already taken place in both of these states. And that was something I neglected to mention, that mail-in voting has been becoming more prevalent. And I'd say it has an inherent advantage for the Democrats, but remains to be seen. And let me know what your predictions are. Once again, I greatly appreciate you listening, but that's all I have for now. And my name is Chris, and I am host of the Stellar Spark Show, signing off. Until next time.